life better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you right when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them is a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a pig. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes.
Well, friends, it is time for another edition of In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski. He's on the line from Juneau, and it'll be a call-in program. So if you want to put a question to Master Gardener Ed Bajarski, you can do so by calling in during the show here. And we want to thank the Flower Farm. They are out there at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing. Their dahlias are coming up. They're planting your favorite bedding plants. Primroses are available, and they've got dirt, compost, gift certificates, and they're open every day but Wednesday, and their phone number is 772-3464, The Flower Farm. All right. In the garden. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What will I be without homegrown tomatoes? And we've got Ed Bajarski on the line. Ed, do you hear us?
I can hear you clearly, Oren.
All righty. Well, I want to remind people the phone number to call in, 772-3808, if you want to pose a question to our expert. And I think it's spring. Feels like spring. What do you think?
Oh, could be. I just saw a guy hauling out a lawnmower from Costco today. Is that a sure sign or what?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, that's a great sign. Wow, mowing the lawn. That almost feels like an abstract thought to me, but that's real. People do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a horrifying thought to me, but luckily I don't do it, so that's okay. But otherwise it is, yeah, and it sounds like maybe you didn't get the big snow dump that we did, which really made gardeners grumpy Monday night and Tuesday. We got 8 to 12 inches of snow here in Juneau.
Wow.
But some of it turned to rain, and we've had lots of sunny weather, and it's pretty amazing, but it's gone. I mean, that, though, there's still, I still have 2 to 4 inches on top of many of my garden boxes, and my wife and I just drove farther up the valley this morning around noon, and again, because as they get closer to the glacier, it's colder, and they have considerably more. So it's a slow spring. All of the indicators, I mean, the ground underneath that snow, of course, is frozen here. I don't know about yours, though, in my hoop house and greenhouse, those places are thawed out, and I'm starting to do some planting and potting and a lot of dreaming, particularly. Mm-hmm. But my little tomato plants, planted them last week, I think either at the time of or just after we talked about seed starting, and so they are up. So again, it's going to be—I mean, it's going to be a month and a half or more before I can do too much with them. But just looking after them, keeping that light close to them, or putting them in the bright, sunny windows right now, and start with some really diluted fertilizer. Give them a little boost, get them started, and hopefully we will have a good crop this year with all that prospective summer weather that we're—I'm sure—going to get.
Yeah, I mean, it's highly possible.
Sure, at this point, you know, anything is possible. You know, I'm still not planting watermelons, but I am going to plant some squash, although those, I think, most of them are going to go up in Haines, I hope, where we have better weather, more sunshine, warmer summer, and up at a friend's place, out the road, 28 miles out. So very different conditions than here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're a lot more alike here in our little rainy valleys or shadow zones or whatever explains the perpetually overcast conditions that we live beneath. But you know,
well, that big water body to the west of all of us plays a big part in that, of course. So there's an unending supply of moisture available to us. So it's then you listen to the forecast. And they start talking about the interior Yukon weather or stuff coming down off the glaciers from the interior down the Stikine River, down the Thomas Bay, down down the, or coming down for us, coming down from Skagway and Haines, that again tends to be northerly winds and kind of blows the clouds away is what we hope for.
Yeah, I would allow that. Yeah, well, and thankfully, you know, I think a lot of folks around here who are getting into gardening in a more serious way, a lot of folks have taken to building greenhouses, hoop houses. It's just more and more a thing for folks who want to have productive yields. And, yeah, that's great. It works.
Oh, it definitely helps. Again, everything we do, as soon as, do you have snow on the ground or is it gone?
It depends where you look, but yeah, okay. I think at most folks' homes, yeah, there's probably some snow pack a little bit on some okay. beds and
sure.
in people's lawns, but it is on its way out, you know.
Okay. So the best thing we can do now with that, with conditions, Eve, maybe nothing's showing sprouting in your garden, which is fine. But getting our garden beds, boxes, hopefully do a little bit of cleanup, you know, tear off any old dead vegetation that might have been left out there from last fall if you didn't get around to cleaning up, and get those covered with some clear plastic to start warming the soil. That's really going to be the thing that will help us get into getting our hands in the dirt. I mean, that's the goal here. And start growing, again, whether it be vegetables or flowers, bulbs, fruit trees, any of that stuff. And also, if you're thinking about gardening, or think, say, expanding your gardens, I'm not sure what your lumber situation is down there to get some good lumber, but, you know, place your order. I've already talked to my topsoil supplier to get one of the first loads whenever he is available to do that, and build some boxes, and, or if folks are going to be starting out new, getting rid of that nasty old green stuff out there in your yard, lay some cardboard down, build the boxes, and then as stuff becomes available, start filling them. Get down to the beaches, throw some seaweed on there. If there's old compost, if you've got some stuff, whether it's old, you know, old grass clippings, if you can get some muskeg, any of that stuff, start filling those boxes with that material. And again, and that old compost also comes with lots of soil microorganisms, and which we want to, you know, get things going. And that's what the warmth of the sun also helps to warm up the soil, which helps to wake up the worms and the bacteria and the fungi and other little critters that are out there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's a good thing to be doing right now. Yeah, this is a good time to start expanding your boxes. Why not?
The other thing, too, is that this is a time of year when sometimes people are cleaning out their freezers of old freezer-burned fish or other stuff that dates back to 19-aught whenever. Mm-hmm. And some of that stuff can be buried. Ideally, you know, depending on your bear situation, bear, dogs, ravens, and all of that, but get that stuff buried. We mentioned the compost. Even if your compost isn't fully done, looking like, smelling like really nice soil, again, mix that into those beds and boxes and then cover it up. And again, it can be working, and then maybe you'll get some, I don't know, is topsoil available to buy in town other than the imported stuff that comes in bags?
That's a good question.
I don't know if anybody is making topsoil with sand and muskeg. I know when I've come down there and visited and seen all that lovely muskeg down there that people want to haul away, I think, boy, there's guys here in Juneau who actually pay to have it hauled to them to dry out, mix with sand, and then make soil. So, I mean, there's...
Huh.
I don't know how big a market you have for it there, but again, that's a possibility for folks, too, to get on the list to get that material to be able to fill your boxes and be planting whenever it's warm and rich and ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, maybe PIA has a composting program that's pretty good sized, and they're able to sell locally produced goods that way, I think by the bag.
Okay.
If there is somebody out there listening who knows more about that, or... if I'm just missing the boat here and there is somebody producing soil that way in town, call on in and let us know. That's an interesting thing to
be
producing.
Well, yeah, because if you can encourage that sort of thing, here's something else I'll throw out there at you that maybe somebody could. The challenge, of course, is finding land to be able to do this. But even if some of that fairly nice peat moss, muskeg, that's being excavated, whether it goes to your dump, I'm not sure where the disposal area is for that anymore. But if that were, if that could be piled up somewhere that it could drain and dry out a bit, which is exactly what the local guys do here. Ideally, they bring it in the fall and pile it up as high as they can, and then you just watch, you know, watch the water and stuff drain out of it. But then that maybe that people could come and get some, again, to make their own soil in their gardens. Again, that's a proposal. Throw it at somebody if they've got some ground that's solid enough that you can back a dump truck in to dump it. And then be able to use it as a, you know, a community resource.
Oh, that's cool. That's a cool idea. And so somebody up in Juneau is doing just that?
Exactly. Oh yeah, there's a couple of folks in town who essentially are, and they've got the machine. They've got a, I don't know if you watched them, the programs Gold Rush among other things. I mean, they've got these screens and rotating trommels which load the material. Usually they run their muskeg through first to get a pile to screen out the sticks and the rocks and the big chunks and the stumps and whatever else. Screen that stuff out and then bring in sand and they mix it. And they are usually mixing it. And I remember, I'm assuming Brian Poust is still there in Petersburg. You know, his suggestion was half and half sand and muskeg as a beginner mix, to which you then add fertilizer, compost, and other good rich stuff to make to garden. And again, whether this be for flowers or trees, raspberry plants, potatoes, garden vegetables, all of that stuff.
Yeah, wow, that is doable. That's cool.
All it takes is some flat ground, right?
Yeah.
I know what a premium that is, and it certainly is here.
Yeah.
So again, that's finding that place that to make that possible.
Yeah. Well, that is something cool to think about. So this time of year, pruning is something that people want to be thinking about too, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I've started doing that, and even before you start pruning, you should sharpen up your tools. I'm going to be doing a workshop on that next weekend. But sharpening, you know, dull pruners, just like dull knives if you're cutting vegetables or fish or meat or anything else, is, well, they're a hazard, but make your life, it's so much more work. So first, sharpen the tools, whether they be small clippers and loppers and, chainsaw, you know, chainsaw can be used in pruning. Certainly I've done my share. But get the tools sharp. Oil them, clean them and oil them so that they work nice and smooth and easy. And if you don't have the right tools, this is the time of year to go out there and look at the local hardware stores and such and find tools that fit your hands. That's the first thing, especially for the little hand clippers, which can do a whole lot of, a lot of the stuff we do. And then a good pair of loppers, again, for those bigger branches. Choose the right size tool for the job. So if you're cutting something up to maybe half inch diameter, if it's green, you can use hand clippers. If it gets much bigger than that, or if it's dead wood, which is harder wood, then some loppers are going to be needed. And a good, sharp, small saw, pruning saw, that again can be really helpful. And the other thing I use too that works really well is a Sawzall. Or a reciprocating saw, and of course I've got a battery-operated one as well as corded varieties. Again, for then, we're kind of talking about moving up into a little bigger branches that may need to be cut. But all of these are handy tools to have, or have a neighbor that you can borrow, or if you get together with your neighbor and, you know, the two of you prune out the, you know, start, one of the places, a good place to start would be raspberries. Make sure you get rid of all the old dead wood that gave fruit last year. And some people I know trim off their raspberries at 5 feet or 6 feet tall. to and tighten up your trellis systems so they're well supported. Get out there, look at the currants and the gooseberry bushes, and take out some if they haven't been pruned in quite a few years. Take out some of the oldest wood, the big, the largest stems in the centers, and what that will do will help stimulate some new shoots coming up from the ground. And those new shoots in 1 year or 2 year or 3 years will then be more productive than that really old growth that may be really tangled, makes it difficult for you to get in there to start harvesting fruit when we are so fortunate to have it in the summer.
Yeah. Huh. So with raspberries, something you said just caught my ear there. Branches that have borne fruit, are they not going to keep bearing berries? Or
correct.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, with the standard summer bearing raspberries, they bear only one time.
Gotcha.
So the stuff that gave you fruit, gave me fruit last year, those stems that came up from the ground the year before that, just a single stem, then last year they put out side branches, which flowered and bore fruit,
mm-hmm.
they're dead this year.
Yeah.
They need to be cut back, and again, you can look, you can normally see a difference in the color of the new stems, and again, the new stems that will give you fruit this year are normally a single stem with no side branches.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to leave those. And I try to choose if your raspberry patch has been there for quite a long time and it's just spread in all directions, if it hasn't been pruned and thinned and mulched and all that, then I'll also try to make a path. I mean, I'm trying to train mine into rows so it's easy to get in there to pick. But if you've got this jungle, raspberry jungle out there, trim out a path through there so you can get in.
Mm.
And I will usually take out this. Sometimes you'll have, you know, nice big tall 5 foot, 6 foot, 7 foot stems. And then you'll also have some of these little shoots that are 1, 2, 3 feet tall. So if you've got a big mixture of those, I'll take out those small ones, which helps to open it up, give you better air circulation underneath.
Mm.
And those low ones are the ones that the slugs may very well be able to get to, you know, climb up to have to eat the raspberries. Because those little ones, again, they're the same age as the big tall ones that grew last year. They will flower and try to fruit, but those low ones, again, are going to be shaded out.
Yeah.
And down there in the shade, they won't get as not much, obviously, sunshine. They won't have as good a flavor, and again, are much more easily gotten to by the slugs. So if we can open up the undergrowth, and then more of the energy of the plants goes into those tall stems, those nice, healthy stems, and should give you nicer fruit this summer.
Mm. Those are good tips.
Now I'll throw in a possible complicating factor here, because there are now, they're sometimes called ever-bearing raspberries or fall-bearing raspberries, and they're kind of different in that, even difficult to explain. So a stem which grows, the first stem that grows up at the, late the first year normally, which is why they call them fall-bearing, will have some flowers and fruit. I'm trying to remember if it's at the top or the bottom, and it escapes me at the moment. But anyway, part of that plant will bear fruit on a stem, and then the next year you'll still get new shoots coming up, but the other half of that stem will bear fruit in the summertime. So you'll get a fall crop from part of it, the plant, and a summer crop from the other part. The next year. The problem with those are, and I know folks who have tried them here, and I don't know, maybe down in Petersburg too, is that we just don't get good fall ripening weather for raspberries. You know, usually it's rainy, and raspberries are very sensitive to rain and moisture, and they rot very quickly.
Yeah.
So those fall bearing parts of the plant, you may get green raspberries that don't ripen very well, or they just rot very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that comes down to, I'll make the recommendation, go ahead and try if you want to experiment, but, I mean, I haven't had and haven't seen or heard of good success with that. Mm. In places down south where they've got a longer season, longer, you know, it's dry in October, and that dry and October don't usually go together in southeast Alaska.
No.
Much less Petersburg or Juneau. So be careful of what you're buying, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you're buying the summer bearing raspberries.
That's a good consideration, you know. I mean, because it's almost tempting at first, before you consider it that way, to say, well, here's two crops, you know, longer
right, right.
thing.
Sounds it's, wonderful.
It sounds better, yeah. But that is a good point, but no, not really.
Yeah, the catalogs brag them up as being the most wonderful thing since sliced bread. and again, just try, experiment. Certainly conditions are changing. But, I mean, again, it was a weird last fall. I picked the last of my blackberries, which are normally, my blackberries, which came from Wrangell originally, and I've gotten a little more history on them at least.
Hmm.
But, they normally, whatever normal is there anymore, normally start bearing or ripening fruit in early August. Well, last year, and then are done by, well, one year, it was October 1st I picked them.
Hmm.
Last fall, of course, we'd already finished our last garden program. And they didn't start until the 1st of September, and I picked several quarts of blackberries the 1st of November last year.
Wow.
And there were still lots of blackberries on there that were still green, and they froze on the plant, you know. So I pruned them all off. We had that nice warm spell back in January, mm-hmm. and all that went away.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping this year we get back to something more normal. So the raspberries start, usually the first ones start to ripen around 4th of July, a little bit after that.
Mm-hmm.
And if the blackberries start normally early August, I would be happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
So those fall-bearing ones, the fall-bearing ones don't do it. Anyway. So then, you know, how's the timing doing here? We're still going. Start looking at apple trees and cherry trees.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if folks down there have much for plum trees or pear trees.
Mm-hmm.
But start looking at those. It is a good time to prune. Temperatures have moderated.
Mm-hmm.
And look at those for the thick branches. First, get out deadwood. Anytime you see dead branches, broken branches, prune them off. Make a nice clean cuts. And prune them back to where there's good, healthy, live wood. Then look at the tree, and if you've got this really tangled mess in there, and with branches crisscrossing, and you've got one branch is rubbing against another branch, start thinning out. Thin out the interior of the tree, which will help in, so the energy of the, so get all the roots are down underneath the ground, which have the food stored from last summer. And that's going to be the other thing, is whether they stored as much food as they could have because it was a cool and cloudy summer. And so how much fruit are we going to get if we get good sunny weather when the trees are blooming? That's the critical time period for the bees to pollinate.
Oh, that's interesting. So
doesn't matter how nice the rest of your summer is, if that two-week period in, you know, mid-May or late May is windy and cloudy and rainy, the bees are not going to be very active.
Hmm.
And then, you know, yeah, 1st of June or the 15th of June, it's sunny for the rest of the summer. Well, maybe you'll have a few fruits. They should be big and beautiful. But that's the other consideration. And there's not a whole lot we can do about that. But thinning out the tree, opening up the center of the tree so light can penetrate, so the breeze can blow through, dry off the leaves, so the sun can hit the leaves, make food for the plant, so the sun can warm up the flowers so the bees will pollinate, and so that the breeze blowing through there will dry things off so that we don't get the fungus problems, which are so very common. Here, most, well, 90% of the time.
Yeah.
Have a helper, you know, especially if you're on the ladder. This is really worthwhile. Have a helper to hold the ladder for you, and then periodically either you, the pruner, or the helper, stop and, you know, get down out of the tree, look at it, you know, walk around the tree, and help identify what needs to be pruned next, or say, we've done enough, leave it alone. So you don't want to be pruning too much in any one year. Again, like we mentioned, we've got all whatever food has been stored in the roots right now will be starting to rise with the sap.
Mm-hmm.
If we prune a lot of the tree, then that we took off vegetation, well, the energy has to go somewhere. It isn't necessarily all going to go into these 14 apples that are going to be the size of softballs.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it may very well stimulate, depending on how much pruning you did, it may stimulate too much new growth. Which we don't want. And then that just, well, makes more work for you, because then you got to come back and do some more pruning. So, I mean, we got a rough, very rough rule of thumb for trees about not pruning more than 15 to 20% of the vegetation of the branches away. Mm-hmm. So you might look at your tree, identify, yeah, this tree is really thick. It needs to be pruned. Maybe you're not going to prune all of the stuff that needs to be pruned in one year. You save some for next year.
Gotcha.
And that's, again, where your helper maybe can, and sometimes the helper says, oh, no, don't prune that, prune the wrong branch. Oh, well, okay, hopefully more will grow back in there. But also, if you've got a helper that's pointing out which branch, you hold your hand out, is it this one, and you shake that branch, nope, not that one, it's the next one over that you want to take out. That can be really helpful. And again, just for the safety aspects.
Yeah.
Take a rope up there or something that you can tie onto the branches if you're cutting out big ones, so then you can tie onto that, and your helper can pull the branch in a certain direction, so that you cut a big branch off and it breaks off three more branches down below when you're trying to take it out, and now, oh man, I'm done pruning because I've done so much damage
right. That
I didn't really want to do. So have some, be careful. And again, depending on the tools you're using up there, safety glasses, maybe a hard hat, isn't a bad idea either.
Mm-hmm.
Up when you're up there in the tree.
Yeah, good points. So is that a thing to keep in mind? Is that each place that you prune the tree, you're going to be basically stimulating either like the tree to sort of repair or start new growth right at that spot?
Yes, potentially. So making the correct cut is important so that the tree can heal it most easily.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we want to make a cut. Say if you're cutting off dead branches, you're cutting it back to where there's live wood, mm-hmm. which will then grow over that cut surface.
Right.
Don't leave a stub. So if you got a branch, say a branch that's the size of my thumb that's sticking out, and you want to take, cut it back. And so you might just, to start with, cut it out a little ways away from where it comes off the bigger branch that it's attached to.
Mm-hmm.
So cut it off so that that you can pull it out of there, and then trim back that stub so it's nearly flush to the surface of the larger branch it was
mm-hmm.
attached to.
Mm-hmm.
There's usually kind of a swelling right there where the one branch comes off the bigger one. That's called the branch collar. And in the old days, we used to trim it flush with the trunk, which made a bigger wound. Well, nowadays we'll leave that collar, that little swollen area, and that's the place where the most rapid healing happens.
Mm.
And again, not making a really large cut means it will heal over more quickly, and that's a plus. And we're not painting the wounds anymore with tar or paint or anything else, or filling holes with concrete. I remember doing that. We got big rotten holes. That doesn't help the tree heal any. It's better off just being bare and open to the sun and the wind and all.
Right.
And so then that way the new growth will grow over that. And again, yes, sometimes that is the place where new shoots may sprout. So then it's worth coming back in, if we do our pruning now, say in March and April, into early May, then go out there in June and July. Sometimes you'll see new shoots starting to form right there where you cut that branch off, which you probably don't want because you took that branch out for a reason, that it was too thick or something.
Right.
Then it's a good time. You can just, very often, if you see the buds just forming, you can just break the bud off with your thumb, and really easy stuff, rather than waiting till it grows out there 2 or 3 or 5 feet as a big new sucker,
mm-hmm.
or a cluster of those right there at around the base of that branch that you cut off.
Right. Right. So the earlier you get it, the more you preserve the energy in the roots for the actual fruit.
Yes. Again, there's a few complicating factors here. This time of year, of course, at least on apples on fruit trees, we would be pruning off some flower buds. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. That the tree, if it's really overgrown in the center, pruning off some of those, that's okay. But if we're looking at other pruning, such as rhododendrons or lilacs or azaleas, those branches have all the flower buds also for this spring and summer's blooming. So normally, timing for pruning those is at the best time is when they are blooming. And you can clip off, cut the flowering stems, to bring indoors, put them in vases, or to share with some friends who might very well like some nice flowers. And then after that time, on the new growth of the trees or shrubs, the new flower buds will be forming. So that's something to keep in mind. It may be that if you've got broken branches on any of those, get them out. If they're dead, take them out also whenever you see them. And maybe I was talking to somebody else here. He's got branches of his lilac. It's really overgrown. They're trailing over his walkway. So those, I mean, they're in the way. I mean, they're a hazard. So, yes, take them out if you have to. But, again, otherwise, best time is, again, when they're flowering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense.
So again, you can certainly go online, and there's videos on pruning an apple tree and pruning a cherry or pruning rhododendrons or lilacs. So that information is out there. There's all sorts of books. Hopefully your library has some good books on pruning. I mean, I've got a fair number of them on my shelves, certainly that I'll refer back to if I'm pruning something a little different that I haven't pruned in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And think about if you're trying to stimulate growth in a certain direction. And again, if you've got some branches that are growing out in a direction you want to train them a little differently, you can pull and tie and weight them down or pull them to one side. And then once they get stiffer, works, of course, best with young branches, train them into a direction. So maybe they're filling in a hole that a branch broke off. Or, well, in my case, where the bears broke a branch off last summer, last fall, that I would like to fill in because that's a good place for them to grow and get more light, mm-hmm. flower, and hopefully bear fruit.
Interesting. That's a good point. So you can really, you can take charge through pruning and sort of shaping to optimize.
Yes. Yeah. And kind of like raising a child, you know, if you teach them in their formative years, hopefully when they get more mature, they will support you in your old age. dreaming about my children.
Sure.
Or those fruits will feed you in your old age, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're hoping for here too.
Right, right. Well, I love it. Maybe that's a good note to go out on for this episode. And we'll just, maybe leave it there and pick her up again this time next week.
Okay, hopefully by then all my snow will be gone and we can talk about all the things that are coming up and sprouting and blooming and we're getting ready to plant.
Yeah, okay. I have a feeling it may very well be the case. I think we're right on the edge there.
Yes.
Go ahead and spring.
Right, that one robin will be joined by many more friends, and they hopefully will be some fair ground for him or her to find some worms.
Yeah, cool. Well, Ed, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, good enough. We'll see you next week, Oren.
Okie dokie. That's been In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski. He's coming to us from Juneau, and we appreciate his expertise very much. We'll be back again this time next week. So if you have a question you want to put to Ed Bajarski, you can email it to me or you can call in during the show, and we will find an answer for you. And good luck to all the gardeners out there, and welcome spring. Up next, it's High Country. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, what'll I be? And we do want to say thank you to the Flower Farm for helping support In the Garden. They've got their dahlias coming up, primroses available, dirt, compost, gift certificates. They're down there at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing. Open every day but Wednesday, 772-3464. That's the Flower Farm. But it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes?